Your name, please?
My name is Robert Kennedy.
And your position and occupation?
I'm a United States Senator from the state of New York.
Senator Kennedy, with the riots in our streets, our youngsters on drugs, with war confusing people, what's gone wrong with America?
Well, my viewpoint is that there are all the problems that you've described. There are those things that difficulties that we have to face. But there are also many things that are good about the United States. There's the Peace Corps, there's VISTA. There are young people who participate and are actively involved in many of the social problems that are affecting our country. There are older people who are involved in trying to help their neighbors, help those who are less fortunate.
This is Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with Senator Robert F. Kennedy, who will reveal to you what he holds to be the responsibilities of his position in life, produced by the Episcopal Church, and brought to you as a public service by this station. Mr. Kennedy's guest today is the Honorable Robert F. Kennedy, United States Senator from New York and author of the new book, To Seek a Newer World. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series, Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, and thank you for inviting us to your New York apartment to have this chance to talk with you. What, in your estimation, is the abiding greatness and strength of America?
I think basically what if we look over the period of the last 175 years, it's not been our economic strength or our military power so much as the moral leadership that we've provided. Not that we've always lived up to our ideals or our principles, because I don't think we always have. But I think basically a trend and a thread that runs through our history is the fact that we've provided internally within our own country, and as we become more involved with world affairs, a certain moral leadership that and a recognition of the dignity of the individual that has inspired people around the world. For instance, even our adversaries recognize that. Ho Chi Minh, when he declared independence against the French in 1946, didn't quote Marx and didn't quote Lenin. He quoted the Declaration of Independence of the United States.
And Senator Kennedy, how much does the leadership of the United States depend upon the individual citizen?
Well, I think a great deal. I don't think that any one person can, perhaps feels that he can affect the major course of history, but if individuals in large numbers become involved in either political matters, in the broad sense of the term, in the social affairs of their country, and take an active interest in what their country is doing around the rest of the globe, it's like a pebble falling in a pool of water, and it creates, in the last analysis, such a wave that it can sweep down almost any kind of adversity. And I think that's is necessary. If the individual does not become involved, then it's left just to others to give direction to the country. And I think then the caliber of leadership is going to be dramatically lowered.
And how much does the individual's contribution depend upon the political system?
Well, I think it's a means by which one can express one's point of view. And it is the individual associated with others in a political system gives him much more of a say and much more power and much more reason to be regarded, much more reason that others will pay attention to him. So I think that the political system, as we operate through the Republican and the Democratic Party, for instance, is very important. I think a whole mass of parties, such as they've had in other countries, is really would weaken the country. And I think also the fact that in the two political systems, various points of view are represented, that we don't divide the parties into necessarily liberal and conservative, but that both groups are represented in a party, I think is a source of stabilizing force within our political structure.
What are some of the great issues that you consider facing our nation today?
Well, I think internally, the problems of poverty, within our urban centers and in our rural areas. It's still very, very much with us, and the fact that there is even greater division between those who are affluent and wealthy on one hand and those who are very poor on the other has to be a matter of great concern. The fact that we have small children in the United States by the thousands who are slowly starving to death, as I've seen them in the United States, is unsatisfactory. The fact that we have people, men, who can't find employment, can't find jobs because of lack of training, because of inaccessibility to jobs and employment, must be a matter of conscience for us. I think in our relationships around the rest of the globe is our position is going to be, not only in connection with finding a solution to the terrible struggle in Vietnam, but the fact that we are 6% of the population and we have more than 50% of the wealth, that our gross national product last year grew at a rate that was double the gross national product of all of the black Africa, that we have companies and corporations in the United States who, after paying taxes, have profits greater than 70 of the countries of the world, that whether we can live with this great wealth and this great affluence, the rest of the world either starves or becomes more illiterate. How we're going to deal with that, not just financially, but how we're going to deal with those other nations, what kind of an interest we're going to take in their development, whether we're going to furnish a position of leadership or whether we're going to try to withdraw. I think those are some of the basic questions that we're going to have to deal with. I think also involved in it is the control of these mass weapons, these weapons of mass destruction. We now, for the first time, have the power to destroy all of mankind. We move technologically far faster than, and control science is far faster and easier than we are able to control ourselves.
How about the heart of the American people? Do you think that they're interested, those who have, do you think they're interested in those who have not?
Yes, I do. I don't think that that's tapped at times, and that's not brought out and developed at times, but I think that that exists.
How are we going about tapping it in this country to start with?
Well, I think that this is a difficult period. I think we've done a great deal, but I think there's so much more that needs to be done. And I'm not sure yet that in some of our segments of our society there's a recognition of that. I think there's more recognition perhaps in some of the business community than there is in any other group. But I don't think, for instance, the clergy or the churches have really played the role that they should have played in these matters.
What role might they play that they haven't?
Well, I think that the idea of people starving is unsatisfactory in our society. The fact that young men are without jobs is unsatisfactory in our society. The children are bitten by rats is unsatisfactory in our society. That we spend $3 billion a year on pets and only half that amount on poverty is unsatisfactory in this country. That 43% of the housing is substandard and dilapidated in our urban centers, even a greater amount in some of our rural communities, is unsatisfactory. But I don't think that the church, in many cases, has spoken out on these matters. I think that they've frequently been interested in their own congregation, which often might be more affluent, and rather than be either disrupt or disturb people, that they've cut themselves off from these social ills that exist.
Who has taken the leadership in recognizing social
ills? Well, I don't think it's probably been done enough. I mean, we've talked about it a good deal. I mean, there's been a lot of speeches about it by everybody, but I don't know that we've done a great deal. And it seems to me that, I think we have to do more in Congress and we have to do more in Washington. But the group that has played a very minor role, it seems to me, when their obligation responsibility is great, is the organized churches within our country. That's across the United States, I think. I think that they could provide the kind of leadership that is so necessary during this period of time. It's not getting intimately involved in politics, because I know churches don't want to do that. But it is to the function of a church, it seems to me, not to just preach the gospel on Sunday, but to give it some meaning. And I would like to see a more active involvement than I've seen in the past. The church played a major role, for instance, in the passing of the Civil Rights Bill in 1964. Without the backing of the religious leaders within the country, we wouldn't have passed that legislation. But since then, even though the crisis grows, and even though there are individual clergymen who, you know, have just played a major role and very, very important role, for instance, with the grape strikers out in California, and with some of our urban problems, and in some of their areas of the United States, they played a very major role as institutions, and in a major way, the churches really haven't done as much as they should. So I don't excuse myself or excuse the fact that we in Congress haven't done enough, because I reckon, as I said at the beginning, I don't think we have. But maybe we could, a active involvement by churches and clergymen would bring about us doing what we should do.
Perhaps a greater understanding of what poverty does to an individual would help. What does poverty do?
Well, I think that if you just take small children, the fact is the children that we've seen, whether it's in Mississippi or in the capital of the United States, in Washington, D.C., or in New York, the fact is that their failure to have a decent diet, by the age of four, they will be permanently retarded mentally. They'll never be able to recover from it. Now, here we have a gross national product of $800 billion in this country. Our wealth has grown by 22% over the period of the last 6 years, and yet we have those kind of conditions. And then it destroys the dignity of a man if he can't find a job and can't find work. It seems to me that that's something worth dissenting from.
Is there any great danger when we try to help people who are poor of just simply thinking handing things will do
it? I think that's a mistake to do it that way.
What does it do?
I don't think you hand people things, because I think that they have to develop themselves, but you can give them the tools whereby they can develop themselves. You can help them build the schools so they can educate their children. You can help them know how to use the most modern farm methods so that they can farm their land and till it and grow product and produce.
How do you feel, Senator Kennedy, about the population explosion around the world?
Well, I think every country it's obviously creating tremendous problems in the undeveloped nations of the world, particularly. But I think that black people don't want white people coming in saying there's too many of you. People of Latin America, Brazil, do not want people from the United States coming down with their neat little white dresses and their marvelously tailored suits and saying there's too many Brazilians in the world. I think what we have to do is to make it clear to the people and around the world what the implications of the growth of population is, what can be done about it, and furnish them all of the material, all of the knowledge that we have, and if they want not only technical equipment but any other kind of equipment, if they wish to have it, then I think that the United States should make available whatever we have and whatever aid and assistance they feel is helpful.
Senator Kennedy, ever since the bomb first exploded, we've been in great fear. Do you think that the bomb and nuclear control is eventually going to destroy us, or do you think it's going to work out for our welfare?
Well, that's more difficult.
But what's your personal feeling?
Well, because I suppose I'm an optimist, and I have children, I'm not going to feel, and I don't want to feel that I brought those children in the world so they can be destroyed by an atomic bomb. So that I have, as I say, I would hope that we could avoid that. But it seemed, as I said at the beginning, I think that we do better in controlling science than we do in controlling ourselves.
And yet we have to control ourselves.
That's the most difficult part, and that has not been a success through history.
There are people, though, in government and other ways that are working towards this either.
Yes, but I think it requires really, again, a major effort by everybody, and not just leaving these problems just to those in government and those in political life.
What motivation would really capture people so that they would want to control nuclear power? I mean, from a practical working point of view, what you're engaged in, what kind of things show some signs of promise?
Well, I think that just the danger of it is what is the primary motivation. But again, the power that's involved with nuclear weapons and the cheapness in which nuclear weapons can be constructed and made and utilized is also a great temptation to a lot of other countries and other peoples. So it's going to be a very, very difficult struggle in the years ahead.
Senator Kennedy, what could the average citizen do to understand a little more the reality of what's involved in our foreign relations and then foreign in our diplomacy? Or perhaps they already do understand it.
I think there's much greater understanding than there has been in the past, because people travel more and they read more and they're better educated and the sources of communication are much easier. But it's also a much smaller world than it's been in the past, because of these same factors. What happens 12,000 miles away has a very, very personal effect on all of us, whether it's the capture of a ship off North Korea or the war in Vietnam. Perfect demonstrations that those are countries that couldn't be further away from the United States, and yet they have an effect on our daily lives.
Do you think that a war such as the war in Vietnam or the war we had in Korea is justified?
Well, those are two different conflicts. I think there are times when war is justified. I think that there are deeper problems about the struggle in Vietnam and what is going on there that perhaps did not exist to the same extent in Korea and perhaps have not existed in other conflicts. Partially, I think, because there are elements, there is outside forces such as the forces from military aggression from North Vietnam, but there is also a clear indication that there's support for the opposition to the government in Saigon from the people themselves. There are elements of a civil war involved, as well as the aggression of North Vietnam, and I think that that's what makes it more complicated and difficult. And corruption and the dishonesty of the government in Vietnam that we're supporting, plus the fact that they obviously have so little support around the country and are able, therefore, not to engender any great efforts on the part of the people of South Vietnam to carry out the struggle. I think that's what is of such concern, causes such concern to the American people. The fact that their casualties last year went down while ours doubled, it becomes more and more an American war, and whether our moral position, therefore, is not undermined, I think, is a question that the people are struggling with.
In our outlook as a people, do we tend sometimes to be too concerned about a particular enemy, such as Russia or China?
Well, I think we should understand that they do not wish us well, both those countries that you mentioned. But I think that it has to be put in its proper perspective and what our aim or intent is over the long run, which is to try to, that we all inherit the same globe, we all breathe the same air, and we're all trying to survive together. As Camus said, what we're trying to do is to not die separately, but to live together.
In all of these things, the office of the presidency is a very vital one. What is the real purpose of the office of the presidency, Senator Kennedy?
Well, I think really to give direction to the country, for one thing, to give direction to the American people, and to provide for the growth and the security of our own, to provide for the growth and the security of our country. That's put in very simplistic terms, but I suppose a general outline, those are the things that the president has to commit himself to.
Do you think there's ever danger sometimes that people expect too much and the wrong things from the office?
Oh, I expect that, but that's, I think, less of a problem, really. I think that that's probably true, but I think that's less of a problem.
We had the pleasure of interviewing your brother before he became president. What, in your opinion, were the great contributions he made when he was president?
Well, somebody once said that he made people feel young again. I think that that was a great contribution. That sort of summarizes it probably as good as anything else. Then he was, of course, involved in a lot of great issues that, you know, there was the problems of civil rights, the problems of the poor, problems of dealing with the Soviet Union, the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Test Ban Treaty of 1963. But I think that he brought a feeling to the American people and more gave them more confidence of what they had to do internally and what their role was around the rest of the globe. And then we, you know, I think everybody could, they felt young and they could laugh at about themselves, which was very important.
Had a little more objective viewpoint.
Perhaps.
In your own role as a senator, getting around to see so many people and really hearing what people are concerned about, what's your estimate of the American people? How do you feel about them?
Well, I think they have obvious, the same things that I know everybody thinks. I think that they have great courage, great tenacity, and great compassion. I think that it is a very troubled time within our country at the moment. And I think that it's a question, I think basically that we understand we have this great wealth and we have this great military power. And I think that there's a basic question whether it's what it means for ourselves as individuals and what it means for us as a nation and whether we're using it properly, and whether just amassing that wealth is sufficient to give happiness. And I think that perhaps we've reached the conclusion that it is not, and there are other elements that are necessary for us as a country and for us as individuals.
Do you feel that as a person in politics and in diplomacy, that your basic faith and belief has an effect on what you do?
Oh, I think so. Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure. Otherwise, I think you're really very lost about what you should do. If you don't have standards that you've established, you're very much lost.
Senator, you say in your book that our future may lie beyond our vision, but it's not completely beyond our control. When you look to the future, what kind of control do you hope for?
Just the fact that we have, that these, whether it's injustices or ills, are still with us. And that we can actually, that we have the power to do something about them, and that we have the power to control these science, we have the power to control ourselves, and whether we're going to work and make that effort to do so seems to me a major issue.
Senator, what are the satisfactions and happinesses that you get from doing what you do?
I think in the last analysis, what makes a difference for a person's life is if he makes some contribution to somebody else.
Thank you very much, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, for being with us, for giving us your viewpoint, and thank you also for inviting us to your apartment for this interview.
Fine. Thank you very much, Father.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced as a public service by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church. Today's guest was the Honorable Robert F. Kennedy, United States Senator from New York and author of the new book, To Seek a Newer World.